From the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, KUAR Public Radio brings you Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, the only program on radio today dedicated to the preservation of comparative generational thought, with your host, Phil Marriage. Welcome to the Crossroads of History.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another 2013 edition of Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow here in Little Rock. I'm Phil Marriage, your host, and I'm really glad you guys can join us this afternoon. If you'd like to listen to the longer version of our program, we've changed the website location here at KUAR. We're now part of the NPR web organization. So if you go to KUAR.org and you click on Programs, you'll have to just scroll down to Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, and you'll see our recent programs posted there. And then off to the side on that page is where our podcasts are now located. The topic today is hippies. Our older generation guest joining us from Mountain View, Arkansas is Tom Cloud. He and his wife own For Mother Earth and in Mountain View. It's a store that is usually called the Hippie Shop there by the locals. It's right down there on the main street, a store dealing with almost exclusively hemp products. Is that right?
We have a lot of hemp and earth-friendly products. We certainly do. We carry a wide variety of things that kind of cover the hippie spectrum. We're not a smoke shop, but we're an earth-friendly shop.
And then joining us from Colorado today is Rob Savoyer. He is the self-appointed maintainer of the unofficial Rainbow Family website, and he's been deeply involved in the gathering infrastructure and other processes for several decades. Rob Savoyer, glad to have you with us here today.
Howdy. Since nobody can represent the Rainbow family, I can't be appointed, nor did anybody ever ask me to do my website, so I'm only in charge of myself. There's nobody in charge in Rainbow. The joke on my website is we're the largest non-organization of non-members on the planet.
Right. And then joining us from Fayetteville, Arkansas, is Emma Yingling. She's from Winslow, Arkansas, actually, and she's on the steering committee and serves as the secretary for the medical marijuana campaign here in Arkansas, the Arkansans for Compassionate Care. Emma, glad to have you with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Tom Cloud, to call yourself a hippie, was that an easy thing to do when you were younger? Was it a natural thing?
Well, actually, certainly it was for me. As soon as I learned about the culture, as soon as I started seeing the photographs of the people involved and hearing the themes behind it, I embraced that name.
Is that an identifying term that you've kept throughout your life then?
Yeah, for me it has been. I've been proud to be a hippie.
Rob Savoy, is that an identifying term that you have found the people you've dealt with, that they actually take that as a self-identifying term?
Well, you know, hippie's just a label, right? It's what other people have to call us. We're just doing what we want to do. And that's the label that people seem to use because it seems like it's representative. Oh, he's got long hair. He must be a hippie. You know, I was a raging deadhead. That's even a smaller subculture. But yeah, I would guess I would consider myself a hippie in the sort of slightly generic definition, but it's a pretty wide definition, so it's really hard to say. And some people have a pretty negative definition. I have a pretty positive one of the whole hippie thing. The joke used to be you saw some guy with long hair and a tie-dye t-shirt. Oh, he must be a hippie. Kids, I think these days, they're not so into all of those particular types of trappings, although you do see that. I mean, I live near Boulder, Colorado. But I think, as I said, I mean, hippie is what you do. It's not necessarily what you look like. Mm-hmm. I know raging hippies with short hair and no beards. And yeah, it's hard to say, but the kids have their own sense of style.
Certainly, there are some visual clues. Usually, you know, as Rob said, long hair is a key, dreadlocks, tattoos, and really just a certain attitude, a certain embracing of what they see in our shop. And when they see me, who also has long hairs and tattoos and that sort of thing, there's a kinship there.
Yep, the attitude is really what makes the difference more than the appearance. And I'm talking about the sort of 20-somethings. But these kids are there really strong for community, you know, really, really strong for, you know, the planet. They've got a really good sense of spirituality and stuff, kind of looking out for other people on the planet and trying to live lightly with minimal impact and do good deeds. And that's kind of one of the things that's really, I think, survived across all the generations.
When I was younger, that was a rather radical philosophy. We were living in the better living through chemistry days with the hope of nuclear power. And you really were supposed to fit a particular mold. You were born into a particular pattern, and you found a wife, you got a good job, you blah, blah, blah. And hippies tended to reject that and right away did embrace the earth and earlier cultures and other cultures. And your right to look and dress and appear as you choose to and be based on your interactions with other people as opposed to how you looked or what your job was or what your race was.
the question I had in my mind coming into this is, what really is so counter about the hippie movement, calling it a counter culture?
We considered ourselves counter, I think, because we were trying to break that mold that came with the Eisenhower years of men looked a certain way and dressed a certain way, women looked a certain way and dressed a certain way. They had certain types of relationships, and the counterculture just balked at that, and all of a sudden you could dress the way you wanted to. You could have a beard, not have a beard, be in any type of sexual relationship that you wanted. And I think that aspect really hasn't changed over the years. I think that the hippie movement embraced a lot of the other countercultural movements, such as the gay rights movement, the civil rights movement, the women's rights movement, and all of it just kind of moved under an umbrella that we call a counterculture that was a rebellion against that mold that we felt we were born into.
You know, I guess I never really thought of us as counter to society. I just saw us following our own path. Other people thought we were counter to something. We were just trying to live a slightly better lifestyle. It wasn't really counter to anything, even if we did have a tendency to, you know, not trust the government and try and live under the radar and a lot of that kinds of stuff. But, of course, these days, a lot of the, quote, hippie beliefs of, you know, several generations ago have been pretty much adopted by mainstream, sort of the mainstream normal people. I mean, Amendment 64 here in Colorado, who would have ever thought of such a thing?
Emma Yingling and the younger generation, do younger people have those stereotypes that are negative still attached to them?
Oh, yes, definitely. And I would say more often than not, it's a negative stereotype because people are misnamed hippies, such as the Occupy Wall Street movement. I heard of so many people my age calling those people hippies, which I wouldn't have referred to them as that. Many of the people that supported that and went to Wall Street who were, I don't know how to label them, but I wouldn't have labeled them hippies, and that's how a lot of my generation saw them, which I thought was bizarre.
People your age, does the word hippie, is that a word you want to use to describe yourselves?
That's how I would describe myself. I think it depends. There's this negative connotation with it. If you go to a music festival or you see anyone with dreadlocks, people want to associate those actions or those things with hippie. But to me, a hippie means someone who desires to live off the land, make as little of an impact on the environment as possible, has a healthy diet, is aware of the meats, the dairy, all of these things that they're eating, and also has a peaceful, loving nature.
Tom Cloud, let's come back to you with that.
Well, some of the stereotypes that I see, particularly the media to present, is the Tommy Chong persona, which is a parody, but it's presented as what we all are, so stoned that we really can't function, and so brain dead that we're pretty much unaware of what's going on around us. There's, of course, the hippies don't like to bathe, hippies are dirty, and that sort of thing. I think that has changed a lot. I think the hippies led the way in the natural foods movement. They led the way in the back to the earth movement. They led the way in the vegetarian movement and being free of chemicals and pesticides, even though our culture embraced chemicals in the consciousness term in the early part of it. Very early on, we started rejecting that, and we learned that that wasn't good for our bodies, and we extended that outward to the other things that society offers us, the chemicals that are in our food and our body care products and whatnot, and we certainly have led the way in rejecting that. Now that's become quite mainstream. You know, health food stores are common now, or in the early days, we're funny little hippie shops that the mainstream laughed at, and it goes on and on in the culture. Tie-dyes are certainly an everyday thing now. Mom and pop wear tie-dyes, and back in the early days, it was quite revolutionary.
Well, you know, I hate to say there's more stuff that's incorrect than correct. I mean, like Tom was just saying, I mean, the stereotypical public perception was that hippies were unbathed and they didn't clean their hair and they, you know, slept with their dog and, you know, were always living out of dumpsters and shoplifting all the time and stuff like that. And most of the stereotype things were pretty negative, to the best of my memory. It still kind of is, depending where you are in the country.
You lead me to that question, is have we gotten over the hump of that stereotyping of people who classify themselves or self-identify as hippies?
In some ways, yeah. I guess a classic example I think of is, you know, you guys remember Katrina, right? It basically did a huge damage. Well,
yes.
A lot of us from the Rainbow family went down to Katrina and built a relief camp in southern Mississippi and Missouri and New Orleans and stuff. And this is probably not what I would have really call the hippie-friendly part of the world. But when they saw how everybody was helping people and feeding people and renovating and cleaning up, and we built medical clinics and stuff, a lot of people there saw the actual positive aspects of the sort of hippie movement and was like, hey, this terrible thing just happened, and we're going to go down and try and do our best to make it better. And a lot of that attitude we got in the beginning was really strange. They called us Hippieville in our little relief camp. They quickly kind of got quite used to us and actually didn't want us to leave when we were done.
Rob Savoy, the people that were involved in all those efforts that you're talking about, would they be classified as hippies?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you want to go by the stereotypical thing, of course. A lot of the people there had long hair. Quite a few had dreadlocks. Many people wore tie-dye or handmade clothing or any of the other kinds of things that people would associate with how hippies look. At the same time, everybody worked 20-hour shifts and busted their ass. It was pretty cool. It was a pretty amazing experience, to be honest. It was nice to have a visible improvement in the local community and really helped a lot of people out in a way that the government couldn't. The government was somewhat powerless down there. It was kind of amazing.
I do want to ask all three of you guys to comment on a period of time that seemed to be lacking in hippie involvement or hippie recognition, and that would probably be the 80s, maybe the early 90s too, when it seemed like from what I've looked at our culture anyway, that the hippies kind of disappeared for a little while. Was that while, Tom, your age group got into their middle years and kind of walked away from some of the hippie thoughts and hippie philosophy?
Certainly a lot of that did happen, and in my store I constantly have people that say, I used to be a hippie, or just as soon as I retire I'm going to grow my hair and smoke marijuana or whatever. But there was a certain amount of that. The folks went underground because they felt like their livelihoods depended on that. They had to take urine tests. They had to worry about losing their jobs if they were straightforward about who they were, but I don't think it ever disappeared. I think there's always been a large underground. It may not have been broadcast by the media, and it may not have been, you know, broadcast to mom and pop America, but the communes never quit, the gatherings never quit, the street people never quit, the peace walkers and peace pilgrims never quit. It's been going on all along.
Tom's kind of right. It wasn't so much that people went underground, is that sort of distilled, super-focused hippie lifestyle, so to speak, is actually really hard to maintain for a long time. I mean, if you're in the living on the road, you get tired of waking up in the back of your truck and junk. And people didn't, I think, so much go underground as try and adopt a little bit of, you know, the society around us to keep your income going and, you know, raise your family and stuff. But in a certain sense, we infiltrated mainstream society, and a lot of our beliefs actually got into and have become part of the mainstream society, like green energy and recycling and things like that. So we actually, in some ways, became more successful spreading what we are into to the rest of the world by kind of becoming part of it.
That brings me to you, Emma Yingling. As a younger person, if during those periods of time in the 80s and so on, there was a little bit of a change in the visualization of hippies, what are you guys doing now? Is your younger generation beginning to open it back up?
I think so. I think same as when we talked about medical marijuana, there are so many people that aren't, they're just not educated about the impact that we have on our environment or what peace within ourselves, within our community, everything can do for you. But I have people my age here in Fayetteville. They have a hog farm on the buffalo here, and there's been a big movement to try to stop that. They already have thousands of hogs there, but they're trying to stop further operations like that from happening. And so many people my age have become involved with that. They've driven all the way there for meetings, to protest. So I certainly think it's present. Not as present as I would like, but everything needs work.
So are you saying that activism is becoming more a part of the younger generation, similar to what was happening in maybe the 60s and 70s?
I think so, yes.
Let me change the direction of the discussion just a little bit and talk about one of the things that I think is important when you think about the hippies, and that is music. Tom Cloud, talk to me about the music of your time frame that was associated with being a hippie.
Appeared very groundbreaking to us. It was a rather renaissance in music that went from in kind of insipid little love songs to songs that had social statements or spiritual direction or presented cutting-edge ideas to the people. And certainly the Beatles are one of the better-known groups that brought us just a whole new way to think. And I would say certainly the Grateful Dead from then until now has been a huge influence through their music and through the people that gather to attend concerts or participate in that type of music. It has certainly kept the counterculture present and active through the concerts and gatherings and various events like that about the country.
Well, so I'll be honest. From the mid-70s on, I was a total raging Deadhead. I mean, I've probably seen the Dead play 400 times. But, a lot of it was the music was sort of a good reason for us to get together. And often, like Tom was saying, the music had real meaning to us. It often, sometimes even motivated us to go do good things because, the words really got to us. And, of course, we'd go to these music festivals and concerts and meet lots of other kind of like-minded people. And it was even more motivation to do the right thing.
Well, Emma Yingling, your perspective as a young person, do you guys still adapt the same types of music, the same groups, or what's happening now?
People my age who would consider themselves a hippie still listen to bands like that, the Grateful Dead, Bob Dylan. I would think of Joan Baez, too, because she did a lot of work, and she and Bob Dylan, I think, toured together and actively protested the war. So people my age are still listening to that, and there's upcoming bands that are more coming out with songs today, but I don't find the same feeling, the same words, lyrics, the same kind of music that hits me deep inside my soul as music from the 70s, 80s. I associate that more with being a hippie or that kind of music. I think the groups aren't there in as much depth as they were back then. I mean, and that was the beginning of that movement, so we're obviously going to associate it with that kind of music. But I also just feel a power in that genre in that time period that I don't feel is present right now. It's hard to explain it beyond that.
Well, let me change directions again here. Anytime you talk about hippies, I guess you have to talk a little bit about geography. And there's a couple of places that come to mind in those early times. Woodstock back in 1969 and Haight-Ashbury in California, Berkeley in California in 67 to 69, that time frame. Is there a place now that you would say has the same kind of connection to being a hippie? Emma Yingling, is there a place for hippies these days?
For me personally, not that comes to mind. The people that I know in my generation, probably, we seem to, and I feel this too, I seem to want to actually hide away and kind of get off in the middle of nowhere and have my place there and still try to be active in teaching my population about being a hippie or what it is to care about the environment you're living in. But the thing that comes to mind for me, I know it's not the same place every year, but Rainbow Gathering. I mean,
yep. I'd also say Asheville, North Carolina. I think it might be on the downhill swing from its peak, but it was a hippie mecca even 5 years ago. Everybody was heading out there because it was a cool place to live and like-minded people.
Emma Yingling, you're in Fayetteville. Could you say it is sort of a hippie town or not?
I'm not sure if I would give it that label.
I would say that almost all university towns tend to have a hippie element. But I wouldn't call it the town. No,
yeah.
I wouldn't say the town itself is, but it has a strong presence of hippie. Columbia, Missouri is a town that has a huge alternative community that is able to interact with the more mainstream community and produce great Earth Days and bring, cutting-edge things to the people. It certainly isn't everywhere.
I do want to bring in one of the aspects about it that comes from my memory anyway. The time frame where during the 60s was also the time frame of the Vietnam War. My question to all three of you guys, as you think about it, did the Vietnam War sort of hijack and derail the hippie political preferences of that time, or did the hippies just catch the blame for all that happened there?
I think the resistance to the war was a hugely unifying part of it. I think that the courage to speak out against it out of the counterculture's resistance to following the mainstream mindlessly and unquestioningly and serving the what we call the machine, when they began to resist it on all levels, and certainly the war was one of the hugest ones. And when the war seemed to be ended, that really marked, in my opinion, the end of the groundswell of the hippie movement, and to sort of be diluted into the job market and into the sort of people Rob described that wanted to bridge both worlds, have a job and raise a family, but still not buy into a predetermined worldview that cost you to shut off your mind and your heart and follow somebody else's directive who you should be.
Well, and I think I agree with Tom. I mean, if you are a visible anti-war protester, you often got a lot of harassment. It was sometimes a hard thing to be out there protesting for peace. And I think it was a very much a unifying thing.
Well, Emma Yingling, that connection that these guys have been talking about to their time frame and how important it was to their development in the hippie thought processes, what do young people, how do they relate to the impact the Vietnam War had on being a hippie? Is it good or bad?
I think good. It brought people together, like they already said, that were like-minded, that wanted to fight for something rather than following the mainstream. We have people like that today because of that movement.
I want to ask one other question. If you're going to have a discussion about hippies, I know one of the other words that comes back almost all the time early on in a discussion is drugs. So let me just ask it to all three of you guys, fair or unfair, the association of drugs with being a hippie. Tom Cloud?
Oh, well, not every hippie experiments with drugs. I would say that it's definitely fair. I think that part of the hippie culture was the exploration of consciousness, that soul, and we discovered that certain substances would give us a different feeling, a different worldview, sometimes reveal things about ourselves or about how the world works. And many of us felt we were doing a spiritual thing to change our consciousness and see what that process taught us. And many people found very positive results in that. Not everybody, but many changed their lives entirely because of what they experienced in LSD trips or being part of the marijuana culture. Things kind of got hanky when we got into the more unnatural substances, the methamphetamines and cocaines and things. That definitely had a negative impact, and we still carry that impact. People see us as sometimes as meth heads or crackheads or what are the various things. But I do think that the public does largely carry that view. A long-haired person, they assume, is a person that is in favor of changing their consciousness through chemical means, and sometimes that's true and sometimes it isn't.
And I kind of agree with Tom. A lot of it was trying to reprogram our brains because, you know, as we say in Rainbow Babylon, the sort of mainstream society around us is a pretty powerful influence. And so, as Tom said, the joke of better living through better chemistry was an attempt to reprogram our brains to really change our spiritual mental direction. It kind of seemed like it worked. At the same point, as I know a lot of us, at least in my groups of friends, have kind of gone past that, even though we could care less what other people want to do. And a lot of us have gotten into things like Tai Chi and yoga and a lot of other similar things that we often find gives us a lot of the same positive aspects.
Well, Emma Yingling, fair or unfair about the drug portion of it?
I would say fair. But as he already said, I mean, when you get into the more chemical or man-made drugs, then it gets to be unfair, but that was a certain population that involved themselves with that, so that would have also associated with being a hippie.
You know, the other word that goes with peace is love, and I think
a
great many of us embrace the love concept that our world is not a place for us to conquer or other people are not our competitors, but that if we approach our entire life through the goal and the view of love, it totally transforms everything that we do. It makes competition into cooperation. It makes an enemy into someone that you can dialogue with and eventually see as just like yourself. I think love is a huge aspect of the hippie movement and a huge thing that the world needs to embrace to pull us out of the downward spiral that we're in.
One last question for all three of you to kind of think a little bit about here and give me your response to. Our particular program, Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, obviously is a generational program. And when I think about the generations, they usually last about 80 years or so, and then they move on. And we're losing a lot of the World War II people now. The GI generation is winding down on us. Pretty soon, the boomers will be in that much senior year. We'll move on.
We
are moving on, yes. And I want to ask you guys to kind of project yourselves maybe two or three generations forward when Emma is actually in the older generation. What do you guys see hippies 50, 80 years from now? Tom?
Well, I constantly have young people from, 9 years old on up to Emma's age say they wish they had lived in the 60s and they were born hippies. And my constant answer is this time needs hippies, and it's very good that they're hippies in this time. And And I think that this will be carried forward and expanded on and improved upon as the newer generations grasp the idea of community and love and peace and respect and alternative life as opposed to life that you're told that you're supposed to follow. I have a great hope for this spiritual movement to continue forward for perhaps hundreds of years. May not always be called hippie, but the concepts are all there, and they're a very important part of society, in my opinion.
Well, I think Tom's kind of right. I think the label is sort of going away, but a lot of the beliefs and stuff have not gone away. I mean, the last couple of years at Rainbow Gatherings, there's been a lot of, as we call them, kitchens, you know, a couple dozen people get together and decide to feed everybody around. And some of these kitchens are a bunch of, you know, 20-something kids, and it's really beautiful. It's amazing. They're doing the same thing we were all trying to do 35 and 40 years ago, and I don't think it's dying. But they don't think of themselves always as hippies. They're there because they want to do service lifestyles. They want to help people. They want to, as Tom was saying, practice loving people and stuff. And I don't think a lot of that's going to go away. Just the label probably will. But the more and more we infiltrate our beliefs in the mainstream society, we don't need the label anymore.
Well, Emma, that's an interesting point there, Emma. How do you see your senior years as you look across the horizon then?
I see it growing, ever growing. I do think that name is going to fall away, and I like how both of you just worded that, because there are people my age who are involved in service activities or simply have a wide spiritual view on the world that I wouldn't say are hippies, and they would not refer to themselves as a hippie, but their mindset and the way that they think and what they want for the world and the amount of love that they have, it's growing from person to person. I don't think the word hippie will be used for those types of people, though.
Well, we've had a really great discussion here about hippies here today. I want to thank my three guests for being with me here. Tom Cloud, speaking to us from Mountain View, Arkansas, up there. He and his wife run the For Mother Earth store. And Tom, coming up in your area there, do you have any festivals coming up that you'll be seeing a lot of people who might be some hippies coming up there?
Well, we just had a blues festival in a town called Leslie, about 30 miles away. I don't know of anything in our immediate area. I know that over toward Fayetteville and in between us and Fayetteville, there are things like Mulberry Mountain and different gatherings that the counterculture certainly celebrate and fully support.
Well, if you happen to be listening to the program today and you're planning a trip to Mountain View this summer, stop into Tom's store and tell him you heard him here on the radio today. I'm sure he'll be glad to know he...
I'd love to see you. Yeah.
And then speaking from the middle generation along with the older generation, here's been Rob Savoyer. He's the self-appointed maintainer of the unofficial Rainbow Family website. And Rob, I'm so glad you could join us here today. And tell our folks a little bit about what's coming up for the Rainbow Gathering this year.
Basically, we're going to be someplace in Montana. Directions will be out in about 2 to 3 weeks. We're looking forward to another good gathering. I mean, after, I hate to say, 15 years of government harassment and trying to shut us down, they gave up. And so I'm encouraging people to come and be in our community for that time that we're there.
And do you guys have a website?
Welcomehome.org.
Okay. And then our younger generation guest today has been Emma Yingling, and she's up in Fayetteville. She's from Winslow, though, and she is on the steering committee and serves as the secretary for the medical marijuana campaign in Arkansas, the Arkansans for Compassionate Care. And Emma, I'm glad you came with us here today.
Well, thanks for having me. I always enjoy it.
Again, folks, thanks for listening to the program today. You can catch, as I mentioned earlier, the longer version of our program on the podcast at KUAR.org. It's on the right-hand side of the programs page. Again, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow is a production of UALR Public Radio and comes to you from the studios of KUAR in Little Rock, Arkansas.